From KCRW, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfiction. And these are the supporters of LA's own downtown soccer team, LAFC, at Banc of California Stadium in Exposition Park. It's probably the thing I missed the most during the worst days of the pandemic shutdowns. Back in 2019, the team was a super fun juggernaut of goal scoring, and I was there with my son to see us win almost every home game. Being able to jump up and down and yell like a lunatic is a great stress reliever and a distraction from the real world. It's one of my favorite things to do. But 2020 and 2021 were tough years for LAFC, and almost everybody else, of course. Games were canceled, played without fans, then with small crowds. The team suffered with injuries and didn't perform well. So on this evening of March 2022, when LAFC played their first game of the season, it felt like a kind of reboot. Lots of new players, new coach, full crowd back in the stadium. And it was a fantastic day one win with a 3-goal hat trick from LAFC's star player, Carlos Vela. And on the way out of the stadium, there was another sight I hadn't seen for a while. A big group of 30 or 40 mobile vendors waiting outside the exits. Most of the vendors were selling hot dogs on rolling grills, cooking alongside bacon, peppers, and onions. They smell delicious and are delicious. I wondered how things had been for these vendors when there were no fans. In 2018, mobile street vending was decriminalized in Los Angeles, but there's still a lot of restrictions on vendors, where they can go, what kind of permits they need.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
Good. This is my son, Matthew.
Meet you. How was the game?
Oh, great.
Hat-trick.
Vela hat-trick.
Producer Jaime Roque, who you met in the last episode of Unfictional, was there in Exposition Park to start a tour through the world of mobile street vendors in Los Angeles. For one thing, I wanted Jaime to figure out if it was even worthwhile for someone to sell exactly the same thing as the person with the grill of sizzling hot dogs next to yours.
Well, Bob, I found out that it actually is worth it, even with all the competition.
Everyone's going to sell at the end of the day because there's a lot of people. Probably like, what, more than 5,000 at every event? But let's say like at least 10, 15% of those people buy. Everyone's going to make money. At the end of the day, there's money for everyone.
Do you guys have your spot where you stay, or is it just kind of first come, first serve?
Yeah, just whoever could get the closest to where they allow people to be, that's where you're going to get. And then whoever just finds a good spot, you stay there.
He didn't want to give his name, but he comes from a family of vendors.
My parents, since they got to the U.S., that's all they've done. They've been doing it for like 30 plus years now. I'm the youngest of four children. I'm 23. I've been vending since, 8 years old? Probably 6 or 7.
That was before street vending was decriminalized.
Back then, like in the early 2000s, the police were more strict about it. So it was like, I would have to run with the fruit. I had to run in the street through the cars with the stuff so the security wouldn't take it away or the officers wouldn't throw it away. And one time my dad even got thrown in jail for vending. I mean, personally, there are officers that still are assholes. I don't know if I can say that. There are dicks and assholes try to belittle someone. But obviously me, I personally don't let myself. I tell them, what's the problem? If you want to just move me, just ask. Don't just come and grab my stuff and try to get me out the way. The last event they had here was a System of a Down here at the Banc of California. An officer tried to get physical with me just because I didn't listen to his orders that he gave me right away. He was like, oh, get out the way. I need you to move. And then he grabbed my cart. I'm like, wait, I'm just trying to finish with someone. He felt disrespected because I talked back to him. They still consider this being illegal and I don't mind.
When he saw my audio recorder, he told me that he was learning video production.
I got into that in high school. In 2 years, I learned it. I started getting jobs here and there. I have some videos that even got a million views, half a million, a quarter million.
And what are those videos about?
They're gospel type videos. I would just work at a church. So there were just videos that got good hits based off the content, obviously, and visualization of everything. Sometimes I put a lot of time into that. There'll be nights where I go to sleep at 4, 2, 3 in the morning, just working on video editing.
But during the pandemic, events at home made him go back to vending.
Yeah, I mean, my pops got sick. He got COVID, and then that led to like more health complications. And then the job I had, it was a good job. I loved it and everything, but it wasn't paying like super well. And it wasn't gonna like be enough to like help them out, pay the bills and all that. So I had to like leave that and then just do what I always learned how to do.
Yeah.
This taught me how to like succeed in life, how to achieve more things, and how to look for better things. Even though right now I'm still doing this and people might think down on me, I don't really care, because at the end of the day, my path might take longer, more steps, but eventually I'm gonna get to where I wanna get to.
From KCRW, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional. Today on the program, producer Jaime Roque at a tour through the world of mobile street vendors in Los Angeles. This is an episode called Los Emprendedores.
So I remember going to Mexico the first time as a kid, and I remember seeing the michelada for the first time, and I knew it as a hangover drink, a drink people would drink after a long night of partying. Now it seems to have evolved and changed. There's a lot of new salts, new rims, you put gummies on the top, it's almost become a gourmet drink.
What you need for a michelada, it's alcohol, the beer. The rim flavor.
This is my friend Miguel. He makes the best damn michelada ever.
It's another level of just drinking beer. A little something more.
In case you've never had one, a basic michelada is made with clamato, lime, hot sauce, spices, and the all-important ingredient, beer.
I personally use Modelo or Pacifico.
With the salt or paste on the rim.
The rim, it's a flavor powder. And the rim paste, I make it. It's like a secret recipe.
But Miguel's version takes it to another level.
It's not just the beer and the clamato mix. I throw in a little extra inside so it could taste different. That extra flavor. Flavor gummies. Mango, strawberry, watermelon, pineapple, blueberry, tamarindo, lime, and the original. So you have options, you know.
But let's taste it. Oh, I'm gonna taste it, yeah. and then let me know my reactions. The best damn michelada ever. No, and I've drank in your micheladas before, and I've told you like this, the best ones I've ever tasted.
Yeah.
Best ones. Nice. And Miguel doesn't just make a good michelada. For the last 6 years, he's been his own boss, delivering drinks wherever a party needs a mango strawberry michelada.
So I have my Instagram page. It's Montoya's Miches. Old customers post me up. They repost my micheladas. They tag me. And I do have my business at home. So it's just like a private underground, I would say, business. You know, like, we got to hustle. I always been a businessman. When I was in fourth grade, third grade, I was loading my backpack with candies, Mexican candies. And I was just like selling them in class. That's how I was making my money.
How much would you make?
I would say I would make like $10, $15, $20 a day.
Dang,
just candies. For a kid, it's a lot, you know.
And he doesn't just sell on Instagram. As a business owner, the customers don't always come to you. So sometimes you have to know where the action is.
I got to Santa Clara for the Mexico-Chile game. It's a risk. It's a big risk that you take, you know, like, you know, if they find out you're selling alcohol with no license or anything, you can get in trouble. And we just post up. We make it happen. We don't have a sign because we don't want to call any, like, attention. But we do have a speaker. So we act like if we're partying there, we're like, you know, like just tailgating. And that's how they come in. They ask us, are you selling it? And we do our thing. We were there for about an hour, and we literally made about $3,000 in an hour.
Wow.
It was crazy. So many people out there that they're looking for something to drink.
But a couple of years ago, after the pandemic started, Miguel noticed that he had some new competition.
I would say after that pandemic, people needed to find a way to hustle, you know, to make their money, their extra money. It woke them up, you know, it woke them up, and they started looking for their own business to make some extra money. And that's when I noticed that it was just like the competition started growing, which it happens everywhere, you know. But like I said, competition's everywhere. And I'm happy for everybody, you know, like that's the best thing you could do, you know, like own your own business. But I do know that if you have your own flavor, your own mix, like it makes you unique. You could say it's not the best, but it is unique.
Back in Exposition Park, I spoke to a vendor named Ermelinda, a native of Guerrero, Mexico, who now calls Los Angeles home. She's been selling corn, bacon-wrapped hot dogs, chips, and esquites with her husband for more than 26 years.
Pues empecé pues por la necesidad. Esa es la primera cosa, ¿verdad? La necesidad que a veces uno va a buscar trabajo.
Ermelinda started to sell out of necessity. She would sometimes go look for a job and never get a call back. So she had to start street vending to provide for her family. She tells me that the rent does not wait for you, the bills don't wait for you, and she had to make money somehow. Exposition Park has provided a way for her family to thrive in the United States.
Ahorita, estoy, me siento bendecida porque nos han dado un permiso de vender aquí.
Recently, Ermelinda has obtained her permit that allows her to safely and legally run her business, but it's only good in Exposition Park. She feels super blessed because before she had her daily permit, she faced daily abuse from the police. Even though vending has been decriminalized, that doesn't mean that it's easy to run a legal business from a vending cart, especially through a pandemic.
Street vendors are synonymous with LA, but they're also have been historically criminalized.
This is Rudy Espinosa, who is the executive director of Inclusive Action, a nonprofit organization that advocates for vendors and provides low-interest loans.
People don't realize that street vendors are such a vulnerable class of entrepreneurs. One day of a loss of sale is a huge deal. And now they've had it, you know, a couple of years of this, of ups and downs, and they've seen new threats from authorities to criminalize them, and we've seen spontaneous acts of violence from random people on vendors. There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
We've heard a lot of stories of street vendors not being able to pay their rent, behind on a lot of the utility bills, just worried about feeding their families.
Rudy's organization is also working to help modernize the California Retail Food Code and break down some of the red tape and high costs that make life hard for a street vendor.
Currently, right now, Jaime, if you and I are taqueros and we wanted to sell in Highland Park, we could go to the city now and go get our permit. But they're going to say, oh, you sell food. Show us your health department permit. And that health department permit for a food vendor is very difficult to get for most street vendors. The reason why is because when you go and apply for a health department permit, you have to make sure you have a food handler certificate, but you also have to pay your fee, which is pretty high. But then you also have to demonstrate that you're cooking your food in a commissary, in a commercial kitchen, parking your cart in a commissary, and then you have the right cart. And that cart is usually extremely expensive. And I think some vendors, like any entrepreneur, Jaime, they're going to make their decision about like, oh, is this worth it for me?
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned a very key word. People tend to forget street vendors are entrepreneurs. You know, they're business owners. They're their own bookkeepers. They're their own accountants. They, you know, they buy the merchandise. They're everything. I remember when I was a kid, you know, I grew up in the Central Valley, so it was a little bit different, but it was like the taco truck was the taco guy. You know, now we have like a lobster. We have, you know, vegan and all this. And sometimes we label those types of street vendors as entrepreneurs, but yet they're all entrepreneurs. The gentrification, I guess, as I would call it, gentrification on street vending.
What I see sometimes when if there's a brick and mortar business complaining or some of these other business associations complaining, they're really complaining about the Latinos, you know, even the black street vendors. And I think that that's a problem that we need to talk about, you know.
At one point, Rudy mentioned one vendor that I should meet. His name is Mario, Don Mario.
Mario is like he's just like, you know, a symbol of like what I see in some of these entrepreneurs. Man, this guy is gifted, not only as an ice cream maker, but as like an orator. I sort of see him when he's out on the street selling his flavors. He has like 20 flavors and he's got whatever you need, Jaime. But the way that he attracts people to his space, he's like a minister. When I see him like do his work, I'm like, man, dude, like these people need to be much more elevated. Like they need to be really put into place where we could hear and learn from them, because this, we see him as an ice cream vendor, a street vendor, but he offers so much.
We're on the corner of Mednick and Cesar Chavez with Don Mario. El bigote, son aquí. Todos
aquí en el este y en el parque Beverly, nomás pregunté, ¿y no sabes dónde está el bigote? De volada. Ah, pues ahí está vendiendo. No, pues está por ahí.
Don Mario, also known as Bigotes, is a staple in the East LA vending community. He says that you can ask for him by his nickname, Bigotes, and someone will be able to point you in his direction. He primarily sells outside of two local elementary schools in East LA and at Belvedere Park on the weekends. He's been here so long that children he sold to as students are now teachers at this school.
Me gusta porque desde México anduve vendiendo en los mercados, en el mero, en el DF, anduve vendiendo en los mercados.
I noticed that Don Mario takes an average of 30 seconds to complete a sale, and I asked him how he got so fast.
Porque yo trabajé en los mercados sobre ruedas, mero en el DF. Entonces tenía yo competencia, un puesto allá, era un swami.
Don Mario explains that he began selling in the markets or the mercados of Mexico City. There, he says that he had to be fast or else the person next to him would steal his sale.
Ese es mi negocio, en esto me dedico. Mi muchacho también, el que está allá también, ese es también, ahí también trabajaba en la construcción ahora que llegó de México. Le dije, mejor vente a vender aquí. Lo enseñé.
Don Mario worked in the restaurant industry when he arrived from Mexico. Being the ever entrepreneur that he is, on his days off, he decided to learn how to make ice cream in order to make extra income.
Me levanto a las 3 de la mañana, 3 y media, hace la nieve. Imagínense, y vengo y me la quitan. ¿Cuál es la ayuda?
I wake up at 3:30 in the morning to start making my ice cream. That's a lot of work, just so the city can come, confiscate, and throw it away. I am here selling 5 days a week, and on the weekends, I sell at Belvedere Park.
Entonces, yo lo que quiero es que den un carrito adecuado para trabajar y se estén pagando. Pero No quieren.
At one point, Don Mario said that he wishes there was a cart that he could go out and buy that would already be set up for vending. He could just buy it and start selling ice cream. And actually, something like that may already exist. I visited a company that might be the future of street vending. They design carts specifically made for mobile vending, and they come with all the permits.
We design something, the health department approves it, and people just walk in with that cart and get their permit.
That's Richard Gomez of Revolution Carts. He's an engineer who used to design food trucks, and now he's created mobile carts that are a fancier and more beautiful version of the carts I saw at Exposition Park.
Yeah, I really wanted to focus on the aesthetics. And I was thinking, okay, what do we need to make the cart look like?
When you look at one of Richard's carts, it reminds you of a little lowrider car.
With pastel colors, with, you know, if you look at the front of the cart, it looks like an old Ford grill on the front. If you look at the back portion, you start seeing like an old style oven, like classic Americana. So there's a lot of features, the flares on the wheels, something that represents, you know, what the lowrider designs come out, you know.
So my cart is designed by Ezra One.
This is Cristina Torres of La Masita Fina. She sells some of the best tamales in Southeast Los Angeles. Cristina was one of the first lucky recipients of a Revolution cart.
It has a really cool graffiti art design, and it has Los Angeles, the skyscrapers in the background. It has like a Katrina on there. It's super street art.
These are carts that are made to be seen and draw people to them. I talked to Beverly Estrada, who runs At Bev's Tamales. She said she served the first birria tamal in Los Angeles.
So my food cart is one of a kind due to the fact that the artist, Defer, he designed it with lettering with the words hustle.
Even though mobile vending has been decriminalized in Los Angeles, even today, it's a business that is halfway legit and halfway hustle. It's too difficult and expensive to be 100% legal, and Beverly says that means many mobile vendors are working in the dark.
You don't have to be hiding in the dark selling your tamales, to sell in the dark, to sell with fear. because it's a daily fear when you don't have a permit, when you don't have your license for your business. That means that you're in the dark, even though you're in the streets, because you're scared of the health department coming and dumping all your food away.
If you can get a beautiful cart that is street legal right off the bat and someone can make it affordable, then this might be the moment when mobile vendors go mainstream. And a man selling his own ice cream from a cart for generations is just as legitimate a business as the latest trendy fusion food truck. Only this ice cream cart looks like a lowrider. And speaking of lowriders, later this season on Unfictional, I'm going to take a cruise through the history of a lowrider culture in Los Angeles. You'll want to stick around to find out when the episode goes live so you can come along. This story, Los Emprendedores, was produced by Bob Carlson and myself. For Unfictional, I'm Jaime Roque.
There are more Unfictional stories coming in the weeks ahead, and please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and tell your friends about the program if you liked it. Plus, you can always listen to over 10 years worth of weird, sad, and hilarious stories from the Unfictional archive at kcrw.com. I'm Bob Carlson, the producer of Unfictional. The associate producer is Anna Buss. KCRW's Content Director for Culture is Anielle Zuberi Fields. Special thanks to Connie Alvarez and Jillian Ferguson. Episode graphics by Alex Cirilla. Theme music by Alex Weston, with music help from Joe Augustine and Narrative Music. Please join me next time for Unfictional from KCRW.